Unos, dos, tres.
I'm Isabel Terrell.
And I'm Sam Cavanaugh.
This is Nowhere You Stand.
The local history podcast that wants to tell you the stories of the city streets beneath your feet.
Acknowledge that the city of Toronto was built on the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples.
This week, we'll be talking about the hippie neighborhood you know and love, the first Canadian home of some of the city's poorest people, and it later became an old world marketplace.
We're talking Kensington Market, before it was cool.
This story starts in the 1930s with a couple of fruit boxes for sale at the corner of Augusta and Nassau.
This little business venture was the beginning of the still-standing Augusta Fruit Market. The fruit market was owned by a woman named Sonia Lunansky, who lived in the market her entire life.
She eventually upgraded her sidewalk fruit market into the building on that corner which bears her store's name, and a quintessential Kensington spot was born.
The area was predominantly Jewish at the time. People who lived in the area had largely converted the main floors of their houses into storefronts and would crowd their families into the apartments above.
This set the wheels in motion for what would later become the Jewish Market, or Kensington Bazaar, on that small strip in downtown Toronto. Now, of course, nothing in Toronto stays the same for long.
In the 50s and 60s, Kensington Market became a cultural hub for many immigrants, namely Brazilian, Hungarian, Portuguese, and Afro-Canadians. Its Jewish heritage continued to be a key piece of the market, but it became home to even more cultures in the 70s and 80s.
That's when it became a symbol of bohemian lifestyle, closer to how we think of the market today.
Pocket Talk segment with Bruce Beaton. He's a resident of Kensington Market and a director at large of the Kensington Historical Society. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so I guess I just want to dive in with how long have you lived in the market?
I've lived in this particular apartment for 20 years, but I was born at Toronto Western, so it's always been around and part of my my blood, I would say. Over 20 years. I've lived in and around the market for about 30 years.
Amazing. Yeah. So I want to dig into the historical stuff later, but in your own experience, how have you seen the market change throughout those 30 years?
When I first moved into this apartment, most of the residential rents and the commercial rents in Kensington Market were much cheaper than they are today. In my time here, I've seen a huge increase in what it costs to actually live here. That changes the basis of the stores that set up here. Kensington Market is traditionally kind of an immigrant arrival area. And one of the reasons it is an immigrant arrival area is because it's cheap, or it was. It's not cheap anymore. That changes the demographic as to who is actually setting up a shop here.
Right, of course. Yeah.
And do you find that the type of stores that have been sort of opening in Kensington, do you find that tracks closely with the people who are coming into the market?
It's hard for me to say. I haven't done a sort of a detailed look at the actual sort of market visitor demographics. I mean, the place is still pretty vibrant, which I like. And I would say in many ways it's safer than when I first moved here. There was a big cocaine problem in the sort of early 90s in Kensington Market. And that led to all kinds of kind of awfulness. There's still problems in terms of drugs and things like that. But I would say that I have observed a slight shift in terms of who is coming into the market. But that kind of shifting, I'm quite comfortable with. I'm quite happy with the shopkeepers here making as much money as they can.
Right, yeah, gotta keep up with those rent increases too.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll notice across the street from me that there are three now empty former clothing stores. The landlord of all those buildings, new landlord, just decided to triple the rent of the person who had those stores there.
Oh, wow.
And the person who had been there longer than I've been here just said, yeah, you know, fuck this, I'm going, right? I'm done here, right?
I've seen that happen quite a bit. I've lived in the area for about 4 years, and even in my time here, I've noticed quite a few shifts.
Yeah, yeah. There's a general shift from fruit and vegetable vendors to restaurant food vendors. That's something that's happening in the market. What's going to happen next, I have no idea, because who can afford to actually rent that across the street? Mm-hmm. Certainly not somebody who's selling secondhand clothing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think that... you know, that evolution really happened. So from, you know, it becoming the Jewish market in the 1930s to kind of what it is today, like, how would you describe that evolution?
I would describe that evolution as being one of spirit. I would say that the spirit of independent grocers carried right through with progressive waves of immigration of people who came here. It's a mom and pop based place. You won't find a lot of chains in the market. It's also not designed. So that kind of anarchic spirit of the place does, I believe, continue here to this very day. That's what I'm sort of marking. People, when they arrive here, want to start something. And the market traditionally has allowed that for that to happen. And that I believe, is embedded in its historical roots as a Jewish market.
Right.
Jewish immigrants arriving here after the First World War moved here from the Ward area, that was St. John's Ward, which is around where City Hall is now located, New City Hall. They moved here because it was affordable and they could set up here. And then it became an enclave for people serving the needs of their community. Mm. And successfully as well, right?
Right. Yeah. So when you use the term anarchic spirit, mm-hmm. can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, anarchic spirit for me is people doing their own thing. I know that really shouldn't count as anarchic spirit, but if you were Jewish and you were here after the First World War and you wanted a job and you were Orthodox, that was very difficult because the work week was different. The holy day, Saturday, would be a day that you'd be required to work and you couldn't work. Mm-hmm. So what happened because of that was an independent mom-and-pop setup of businesses in this area. That spirit continues to this very day, I believe. I think that there will be a profound shift in Kensington Market when the people who start and operate stores don't actually work in them. Mm. Right, that's going to be a different. So that the anarchic spirit I'm talking about is the spirit of enterprise, the spirit of let's start a store here because we can and because people are coming through here.
It's very DIY.
It's very DIY, and it's not designed. Right, that's one of the interesting things about Kensington Market.
It's their houses.
Yeah, their houses, and it's there's a layering there. There's a Victorian suburb, then there's this other market that's on top of it. But it's not like the Eaton Centre, for instance. Right?
Right.
And I think people come here because of that. That's why it is loved, and that's why it's embraced, and that's why it's rare, because it's not. You couldn't design it, right? If you were to do that today, you couldn't do it, right? You couldn't get the clearances, you couldn't get the city to actually buy into it. It wouldn't happen.
It would look like Epcot.
It would look like Epcot, or it would look like the Eaton Center with, I don't know, vegetables.
Yeah.
Kind of that idea of an artificial city that was just plopped down on a set of land.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we are, I think in Kensington Market, we're a bit of a sort of a rare plant.
Mm-hmm. Right?
We are an organic thing, right? Yeah. Somebody hasn't conceptualized this or gone through and approved it by committee.
Yeah. So I'd like to move on a bit, and can you tell us a bit about your work with the Kensington Historical Society?
You'll see a historical society pop up whenever a group of concerned citizens, I'm doing air quotes around that right now, feel that a heritage is being lost and is slipping away. Any historical society, if you talk about the history of any historical society, you'll find that's kind of the roots of most of them. A few years ago, a bunch of people who lived in the market saw that the changes were here and that the history wasn't being written down or shared or embraced. I didn't get involved at the ground level. I came through a museum studies stream, but because I lived here and because I knew a little bit about the history, when they needed somebody to step into the board of directors, I was ready to do that. The work we do involves primarily kind of a two events a year where we invite people to come and talk about their experience of being in the market, whether it is people who were involved in the First World War here or people who were involved here when their families first immigrated from Poland here. So we do sort of a biannual event. I mentioned earlier on, I do oral history where I sit down with the older members of the community, people who have an ongoing history with the market, and get them to talk to me about what they've got and what they've done and what they've seen and the changes that they've seen.
Cool.
That's primarily the work that I do with the Kensington Market Historical Society. Right now we're working on a proposal for the renaming of laneways. Laneways, I haven't even noticed this, but laneways are now getting named by different communities to reflect some of the important heritage of those communities. And there are all kinds of laneways in Kensington Market. And so there's a whole like, oh, what are we going to call it? Let's call it Alley Cat Lane. Anyway, we've basically gone through and tabulated some of the history and made some suggestions. And then we'll turn that over and then they can run with it as they will.
Is there any particular laneway that you're particularly keen on?
In terms of its naming? No, in fact, I must confess, I got a bit of a problem with the naming of laneways because they don't carry with them the context as to the importance of the name. So we can name this laneway whatever it is. Like the one I can point to an example of is Little Hayes Lane, which is just up on Baldwin. It runs north off of Baldwin Street. Who knows who Little Hayes is? I do, because I know the history of the place.
Right.
But if you don't know who Little Hayes is, then it's got no significance to you as somebody who's just kind of strolling along. I think it needs a little extra interpretation, a QR code or a little tiny plaque. This is who this person is, and this is why we've done this. So there's a gap in terms of that sort of stuff. But that's just my own personal opinion about historical relevance and meaning. The first person who owned this land was a slaveholder. So was the person who was on the next park lot. Mm-hmm. Alexander Grant was his name. He was a slaveholder as well. And the other side of Spadina, a guy named Peter Russell, also a slaveholder. That's who this ruling elite was.
Mm-hmm.
They were often slaveholders. James Babbie never stepped onto this land. He never built on it as he was supposed to, given this free lot of land. He was supposed to actually build on it, but he never did.
Hmm.
He flipped it, right? It's a story of Toronto, right? Take a piece of land, sit on it for a little bit, and then make some money on it, which I'm sure that's what the person who owns the stores across the street is trying to do as well.
It doesn't seem that different from what's going on right now
some,
in the city.
Some traditions continue, right? Deeply embedded in the bones of this place.
I just want to ask a question, because you said that all of the sort of ruling elite were slaveholders at the time. It was quite common.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any history within sort of the land that became Kensington of sort of the descendants of like those slaves that might have been brought over here?
Not that I know of. That did happen sort of a little bit east of here in the area called the Ward. Sort of former descendants of people who were enslaved coming into actual Kensington? No, but in the ward, yes.
Okay. And so more of, I guess, the Afro-Canadian culture within Kensington probably comes from immigration out of the Caribbean later.
Primarily, yes. And you still see that today. There's a
store
up the road here. You still see food. You still see different stores, different vendors who are actually selling goods come out of that tradition. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've always been a fan of some of the patty shops.
Patty shops.
Me too.
Market. And that's definitely a layer of the history that exists here.
Right. Yes.
And I don't know if we touched on this already, but who's writing the most recent layer, the newest layer in the market right now?
I would say it's probably high-end restaurants and exclusive food shops.
Right.
If you walk along Kensington Avenue, you'll see a little bit of it. You'll see it on Baldwin Street, and you'll definitely see it over on Augusta. For instance, there's an exquisite egg place that makes exquisite chocolate eggs that's right on Baldwin Street. I wonder, hey, egg person, who's paying the bills there? Because the rent there is extraordinarily high,
uh-huh.
and I don't imagine there's, maybe because it's Easter soon. Maybe they are making enough money to sell their rent. I've seen that particular shop flip three or four times in the last couple of years because people move in, they set up, and it's a great idea. But people come to Kensington Market for deals, not for high-end, high-end, exquisite Yorkville-esque type of gifts.
Yeah, I always come here for the unique finds.
Me too, of course.
The bargains.
Yeah.
Just maybe one last question. So when you say that the Historical Society came from a place of concern.
Yes.
I mean, did it bother, I guess, you or people you know with the Historical Society that it was this huge tourist attraction that I guess no one really knew anything about?
Sorry, one more time. What do you mean?
I'll summarize. What concerned you about the market?
Part of the concern is there's a tension between new places coming in here and old places that are still here. It's a residential commercial area, and so there's an innate tension that's always kind of existed in the market, but it's exploding now. There's been a liquor license application made for an old grocery store over on Augusta for 610 people.
Wow.
That's not in scale with the actual history of this place, and it will change the neighborhood. So part of the actual Kensington Market Historical Society's importance, I believe, is that we remind people of the actual historical scale of the place, and it's the scale that makes this place unique.
Love that.
All right, before we go, Bruce, did you have any kind of thing that you wanted to add that maybe we didn't cover that you'd like sort of people to know about the market?
I would say that it is beloved, the market. I would say that it has a symbolic value. There was a show that came out on CBC in the late 70s called King of Kensington. And I think that its meaning is tied up with the way we look at ourselves. I know there's a lot of trumpeting of, diversity is our strength. The first time that Canadians kind of glimpsed that on a national scale was through a Kensington Market lens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what its importance is, I believe, is that it's got a mythic quality as well as an actual street level quality. We'd love to have a little Kensington Market Museum. So if anybody out there is listening to this and you've got a couple of $1 million you want to donate to us, you can buy us a building, we'll put your name on the outside of it.
Yeah, and did you have any personal exhibitions that you're doing now that you'd like to let people know and check out?
Not Kensington Market based. I also work at Mackenzie House Museum on May the 4th. I'm doing a Jane's Walk. That's going to look at Bond Street and the history of Bond Street. I also work at Colburn Lodge, so you can come by Colburn Lodge in High Park, and I'll give you a tour there if you want.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Bruce.
My pleasure, yeah.
It was a pleasure.
Nice to meet you all.
Thanks, Rob.
Cheers.
Thank you for tuning in to Know Where You Stand. Want us to come check out your neighborhood?
Then send us an email at kwystopodcast@gmail.com. Or feel free to follow us on Twitter at Isabel Carroll and on That Cat.
Thanks again for listening.
Sam and Isabel
out!